It feels to me like the setup is unfortunately like a stagflationary type of situation. As a crypto, you know, focused investor, what does that mean for Bitcoin? I believe that like 60, 65K is like 20K.
Michael Nadeau, founder of the DeFi Report, delivers clear market insights and on-chain analysis for investors navigating crypto and Web3.
Blending equity-style research with a background in finance, he makes complex DeFi trends accessible through actionable frameworks and educational content.
We think we're at fair value right now, but actually in the last two bear markets, we had like these deep value opportunities. What typically happens in a bear market, deep value in this case would be if the long-term holder supply dropped all the way down. You want to have some dry powder for these sort of deep value opportunities because the forward-looking returns materially change based on sort of where you're getting in. I don't know when, but it feels like that's kind of the setup here.
Hey guys, I hope you've been enjoying the episodes I've been putting out as much as I do. For me, it's been a great journey with less noise, more signal, talking to all these experts all the time. With each and every episode, I feel like I have new points to ruminate on, things to ponder over. And yeah, I've just been learning so much. So if it's the same for you, I'd appreciate you subscribing to the show on YouTube, also commenting with the episodes when you have something to say, like it and share with your friends and families and colleagues. That would be much appreciated. And that way we could reach more people with this great content and grow together. So thanks a lot for doing this. Much appreciated. And yeah, let's go. Hey guys, welcome back to Less Noise, More Signal. Today we welcome back Michael from the DeFi Report to the show. It's great to have you back, Michael.
Great to be here, Pascal. Thanks for having me.
Yes, we had you on the show already twice, I think. The last time was when in December we were just discussing or talking about it, discussing back then already what's happening to BTC. And I think a couple of things have come to fruition. So I definitely wanted to get you back on. And I feel like this is something that you and me, we talked offline. We want to do on a regular basis, like once a month, just come together and you can kind of share your expertise with our following and for people to kind of really learn how you think. And yeah, I mean, the DeFi Report, I'm a subscriber to your show, like newsletter or research that you're putting out. It's amazing. And we just also created this discount code, Less Noise, More Signal, for everyone who wants to get in on the action. You get 20% off on Michael's and his team excellent research over at the DeFi Report, which is thedefireport.io. And yeah, it's great to have you back. And so thanks for doing the God's work, so to say.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Pascal. It's always fun to come on and chat with you about what's happening in the crypto markets. You know, as a crypto focused or crypto oriented investor, it's been an interesting period of time over these last few months or so since we last talked in December. So yeah, happy to get into, I think a lot of people are kind of thinking about, you know, where's Bitcoin at? You know, where are we at in the cycle? There's quite a bit going on in the sort of macroeconomic environment right now. So excited to chat with you today.
Yeah, I guess we have to start with macro. Afterwards, I want to get into one of your latest reports that people can unlock over at the DeFi Report. We'll get into this, but maybe first the macro situation. I mean, things have been sort of spiraling out of control. At least oil was quite volatile in the last few days, and people have been speculating what's happening. What's your read? Like, what's the macro situation like, and what do you read into this conflict that we're currently seeing in the Middle East?
Yeah, it's a lot going on, certainly. And, you know, I think it's actually probably a decent time to like be stepping away from the screens a little bit. There's just the news cycle is pretty active these days. Going into this year, our view on kind of the macro situation, we mostly are focusing on, you know, capital flows. Our view is that, you know, you've had tariffs that are kind of pulling capital out of the private sector, out of the economy at a rate of almost, you know, 1% of GDP, you know, per year. And so on the fiscal side, we've viewed that as like more of a tightening on the liquidity side from fiscal. And then when you look at monetary policy, you've got all of this tension with Powell, with the Fed. We now know we have a new Fed chair coming in. He seems to be potentially a little more hawkish than maybe what the market was initially thinking Trump's selection would be. And so, you know, I think we've been in this kind of like pattern here where there's just not an impulse of liquidity on either the fiscal side or the monetary policy side. And now we're going into this period now where geopolitics is getting, you know, more and more messy. We're seeing oil prices, you know, rise. It's been extremely, extremely volatile. It's actually, you know, we're recording on this on March 10th. And the oil price is down a little bit so far on the day. But I think that is now the key variable that's been thrown into this mix, with what's going on in Iran with the Strait of Hormuz and what ultimately plays out here, because I think this is going, the price of oil is going to tell us sort of what happens with long end interest rates and what happens with growth in the economy, you know, whether we potentially move into a recession here. I think from my perspective, just observing the sort of business cycle over the last few years, like it's felt very late cycle to me. Like I'm sort of seeing everything that I would look for in a late cycle environment, and commodities tend to be the thing that sort of goes at the end. And we've seen gold, silver, and other commodities really outperform in 2025 into early 2026. And now you're seeing oil do that. When oil outperforms, that can lead into a recession. So the setup to me is, you know, you just don't have a ton of liquidity out there. Now you have this problem with inflation. That looks to me like the Fed's hands are basically going to be tied. If you look at the CME pricing of rate cuts now for the rest of the year, it looks like we're not going to see anything until September or so, potentially October. And there's a chance there's going to be a hike somewhere in here. This is a totally different sort of forecast from what the market was thinking was going to be coming. I think going into this year, you know, thinking we're going to get this very dovish Fed president, they're just going to bring rates down. Oh, that story is pretty much gone. This idea of run it hot, you know, debasement trade, all of that, I think has totally shifted around. So a bit of a ramble, but that's kind of my view. And I think oil is probably the most important thing to pay attention to right now. So,
you're pointing to a good point here, you know, in terms of like a lot of people thought he's going to run it hot, Mr. Trump. And I'm kind of trying to make sense of this as well. Like what is going on in his head, you know, like, because I feel like from a grand scheme of things, you know, I can understand what he's after. You know, he really wants to kind of rebalance trade, which is probably an endeavor that takes, I don't know, decades for it to play out. And then at the same time, you know, he's got these midterms coming up. And so, I mean, on the tariff situation, maybe first, you know, things are not looking any better. You know, a lot of people hope that this Supreme Court kind of turn down will better the situation, will improve everything. But I mean, Trump still has all these aces up his sleeve where he can pull and then also make sure, you know, tariffs keep on going. In that sense, it might make things even worse, right? And then also, like, yeah, what do you think is going on with Trump? Why is he doing this? You know, is he maybe trying to, in summer, still trying to run it hot, or won't he be doing this?
Oh man, you know, how do you get into the mind of yeah. Trump? It's, you know, there's quite a bit going on right now. I mean, I think, you know, coming into this term, like I think my view on things were that, you know, the primary focus is on trade, and this is something that they really want to tackle. Here in the United States, like we've had basically a gutting of the kind of middle America, the production sort of area of America, and all of the jobs are on the coast these days. And that's creating quite a bit of, you know, internal conflict, populism, things like this. And so I believe that Trump is correct, that this actually really needs to be addressed. It's an extremely, you know, complex problem to solve. And I think right now, we are in the early stages of like of actually sort of him gaining, I think, enough leverage to sort of get what he wants. But you're right, like even to actually, you know, get all of the investment to come into the U.S. to actually shift production back here, get the sort of you know, currencies lined up so that, you know, you can even, you know, it's even attractive for you to be exporting goods to for others. Like this is incredibly complex. Now we have, you know, two instances where, you know, we've removed Maduro down in Venezuela. People seem to even forget that even happened. That was a really big deal. And now you have, you know, Iran, and there's like, you know, 15 countries or so involved there. You've got Russia and Ukraine. And, you know, I think when you sort of zoom out from all of that, what's really going on here? To me, it feels to me like his focus is mostly on China. And like most of the things he's doing are ultimately to you know, try to put the United States in a better position against China and to try to hurt China's ability to just produce all of the goods for the world, and have these massive surpluses. And it's a problem, not just for the United States, but I think for other countries as well. And so that's, to me, is the high level. And then you have all of these things that are just happening. Sometimes I wonder, is he just, he seems to be like on a major power trip right now, where he's like the military, you know, I would say the United States military, it's very impressive to see what some of these operations, and they're rolling out new weapon, things that we just haven't seen in, you know, 10 plus years or so. And so it feels to me like he's almost like flexing a little bit on some of this stuff. And it's hard to say. Nobody's in the war room. And so we don't know, you know, we can only see what we see on the news.
Imagine lowering your tax bill while stacking Bitcoin. With Blockware, you can. Thanks to new tax guidelines, you can write off 100% of your mining hardware costs in a single year. Blockware's mining as a service takes care of everything, so you can start mining Bitcoin effortlessly. Visit mining.blockwaresolutions.com/LNMS and get $100 off for your first miner.
No, you're right. I mean, I'm just asking myself, you know, like, he's got these midterms coming up, you know, and if he wants to pull these things off, like these really major shifts that he's after, I feel like he needs to have the support, you know, of the Senate, of the House of Representatives, of all these sort of bodies in the United States. And it doesn't look like he's going to win that easily, you know. And now, with maybe a conflict which is generally inflationary, oil is maybe already showing this, it's down on the day. I think it came down yesterday as well. So it's not that clear cut of a way if it's really spiraling out of control. But at the same time, if we were to see higher gas prices, higher gasoline prices, I mean, the average American would be hurt. That would kind of be bad for the midterms, you know? And so I'm kind of wondering, okay, is he trying to pull the wheel around at some point, you know, the steering wheel? Or, yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy to see where he's at. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think a lot of people sort of had the view that coming into this year, it's a midterm year. The Republicans need to maintain, you know, control of Congress. And, you know, it would be easy to just sort of see, like, Trump will focus on the markets and focus on appeasing his populist base. And that's what we should expect. And I think some of this has been a little bit of a surprise in terms of, you know, these actions that are being taken. And then, you know, it'll be interesting to just kind of look at the polling numbers as this sort of, you know, drags on a little bit. And one of the things that will get, you know, people's attention is the gas price. I mean, that's just one of the top thing that will get your voter base turn on you is gasoline prices, just because it's an input to almost everything in the economy. And so you have this happening. There's quite, I mean, even before this, expect there to be quite a bit of turmoil around the sort of build out of AI and what AI is doing, you know, to the economy over here. And that's creating, you know, quite a bit of internal conflict, I would say. And I think there's more of that to come. You know, I would say that, like, he's in a much worse position in terms of being reelected, or at least the Republicans are in a much worse position now than they were a few weeks ago. But we'll see, you know, we'll see. There's a chance that he can, you know, end this conflict, or, you know, it seems, I've been somewhat surprised and in some ways impressed with, like, Trump's ability to just kind of talk the market, you know, through things. And, like, it's just, I've never seen this in my lifetime where a president and, like, an administration seems to be just this active and just kind of, like, on the ball and just really kind of steering the ship. I've never really seen this in my lifetime, so it's been interesting to observe.
Yeah, I mean, he's been threading this needle, that's for sure, you know, and he's been doing it quite well. But then at some point you're asking yourself, like, is he getting over his skis at some point, you know? And maybe with this Iran conflict, it might be exactly this, you know, because Maduro, yeah, he was sort of, you mentioned it, people have already forgotten about it because it went so smoothly, you know. And then maybe this time around, Iran, Israel is involved. There's, like, probably, like, ideological reasons here, you know. These guys are not as pragmatists, right, or, like Trump. And so, yeah, maybe he's kind of miscalculated stuff here as well. But I mean, you said it yourself, you know, markets are now pricing in no cuts before Q4. That's what I read this morning, and I didn't check the actual numbers, but it's kind of crazy. But then, you know, we also had last week these like NFP prints coming in, where people started speculating on the labor market that it's actually deteriorating. And so what is your read on this? Because if it were the case and we had inflation on the one hand kind of skewed to the upside, but then we also have a deteriorating labor market, it really feels like the central banks, or especially the Fed, would be caught between a rock and a hard place, you know? And so, what's your read on the labor market?
My read on the labor market is that it's deteriorating, but it's not like at full stress. And I think, you know, it probably won't go into like a full stress until the financial markets roll over. I think that's kind of typically the asset prices, financial markets are the sort of leading indicator there, and then layoffs come after. So I think it feels to me like if you look at quits are dropping. When you look at jobs hard to get, they're rising. This has been going on for a while. I think like if you just kind of look at the unemployment, the high level number, I think that's kind of a head fake. I don't think that actually provides that much value in terms of really trying to understand what's going on with the labor market. But it just looks to me like the people that are essentially what's happening is a lot of companies are able to without hiring, and they're using AI. You know, we're in the early stages of this, but I don't think we're seeing layoffs necessarily. We're just seeing companies not hiring. And so we lost 92,000 jobs last month. You know, when you look at the revisions and everything over the last year, you know, it's hard to make a case, I think, that the job market in the US is on good footing. So you have that. That's a problem for the Fed. And I think Powell is somewhat acknowledged this. I mean, I think at the last press conference, he thought it was sort of turning around. I disagree. I look at some of those things. And then the thing that I'm really focused on is the savings rate. So the savings rate has come down in the US to around 3.5%. The like long range average pre-COVID was 7.5%. So you're depleting savings. And then we're seeing credit card debts, you know, rising, and that's typical with what happens when people deplete their savings. So you're just kind of seeing the signs of this. Retail sales have been weak over here. So you're kind of seeing, you know, we have a K-shaped economy, and like, you know, we've kind of been able to maintain, I would say, a fairly strong economy, even as things really diverge between different classes. But it just feels to me like that's because of like this lack of liquidity in the system, and now potentially layering in inflation. It feels to me like the setup is unfortunately like a stagflationary type of situation, where you have what I'm observing is like break even inflation rates are rising, break even yields. So, and then you have the nominal yields have been somewhat flat. So real yields haven't really come up just yet. But that's kind of something to pay attention to as break evens rise. Are we going to see the long end start to really kind of go? And how's that going to bleed into, you know, the equity market and things like that? So a lot going on. But yes, I think the labor market's weak, and it's like now the Fed is back to like this struggle between which one do they weigh towards. I think that their hands are going to be forced, and they're going to be cutting, and it'll probably be, you know, it's potentially like emergency rate cuts, you know, coming at some point. I don't know when, but it feels like that's kind of the setup here.
Hey guys, I'm thrilled to share my new book, The Bitcoin Enlightenment, co-authored with Mexican billionaire Ricardo Salinas. Make sure you grab your copy now and learn about how one of the richest people in all of Latin America thinks about Bitcoin. You'll find the link in the show notes.
Yeah, that's one of the scenarios that I see as well. You know, like as you said it yourself, you know, like inflation, it feels somewhat entrenched, but at the same time, it could stay elevated because of the conflicts and everything that we're seeing. But then, you know, you mentioned that we have Warsh coming in. And he a lot of people have seen him as a hawk, and that's why Bitcoin back in the day also maybe corrected somewhat. But then again, you know, he's all in probably for lowering these rates. And if then the labor market is actually deteriorating to a point where he can justify something like this, we could see for a short period of time like that real rates will come down, you know, because of inflation, which is somewhat elevated, and then real rates going down until you have like, okay, shit moment. We really have to do the emergency cuts. And then we're back to 2021 or 2022, you know, and then,
I think right now the market's looking at this and say like real rates are sort of flat, because I think the market is saying, you know, we don't think the Fed is ready to cut just, yeah, basically your break-evens are rising, but the Fed's not ready to cut. Once they sort of price in that the Fed is going to move, then real yields should come way down, is kind of how I think about that. And then as a crypto, you know, focused investor, what does that mean for Bitcoin and, you know, some of the things that we like to invest in? Potentially an interesting setup on that side.
Yeah, I mean, some people have been pointing to Bitcoin, which has been relatively performing well the prior week, you know, and it also outperformed S&P 500 and other risk assets, you know, I mean, on the bounce and sometimes significantly, like 10-1 or like 8-1, you know. And so I'm just really wondering, like, why is this case? Is this the case? You know, is it because Trump was hinting to the fact, okay, that this could be de-escalated quite quickly? Or is it because people are thinking, okay, you know, they're looking through the fog and they're saying, okay, maybe at some point, you know, we have to cut? Or how do you kind of interpret this relative strength and outperformance in the last few days?
Yeah, it's a good question. I try not to spend too much time trying to understand like the short term. You know, I don't know why it's up a little bit, but I think if I were to kind of zoom out a little bit, I would say like Bitcoin has mostly been, you know, pretty oversold for a while here. You know, we've come down from the highs, you know, 126K or so, and we've hit what I think is like, you know, kind of fair value. We came all the way down to the low six, and, you know, I think we've sort of come into like the sort of upper edge of this like kind of fair value zone, which is where you typically go, like kind of at the bottom of bear markets. In the last cycle, we kind of came down similarly in like April, May period, and that we got to like the kind of the fair value zone very early in the last bear market. We're kind of doing the same thing here. And this bear market has been very similar to last back in 2022. And really what I'm trying to assess right now is kind of, you know, is there a chance that we are ultimately going to go below some of these fair value numbers? This typically takes about a year or so, you know, to play out these bear markets. But, you know, as far as why Bitcoin's up, you know, it went up to 74K or so last week. Then it kind of came back down to 65. Now we're up to like 70 or so. I think we're just bouncing around. You know, I don't see any like major catalyst or something that would kick off a more sustained, durable move, but we'll see. We'll see.
I'm definitely with you on that. I mean, a lot of Bitcoiners are usually then just like, if they see positive numbers, you know, they're clinging to them and then like, okay, yeah. You see it's actually digital gold. It just behaved like this and it's based on a weak,
yeah, right,
sort of amount of data. But then at the same time, yeah, you're exactly right. Probably a lot of people are overinterpreting this, and it's really Bitcoin has come down significantly. You know, it yeah. might have front run a lot of this as we discussed early December or stuff like this, you know, so we could even argue that could be the case. But yeah, maybe we can turn to Bitcoin and to the piece, you know, that you wrote, I guess, last week. And then you already dropped a couple of terms, you know, fair value zone, it might fall through that and then go into deep value zone. So if you could share your thoughts on where Bitcoin is at right now and, yeah, in terms of bottoming and stuff like this and how you think it will be playing out over the next 3 to 4 months, this would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is something that we spend a lot of time on, is sort of, you know, cycle awareness, we call it, cycle awareness reports. These typically combined some of the important KPIs that we look at to assess the cycles. We also look at a lot of Bitcoin kind of market structure. We look at different holder cohorts and try to understand market structure and also kind of like cost basis of the Bitcoin network. And that helps us navigate these cycles. And then we're overlaying on top of that, you know, kind of the macroeconomic analysis. And we try to play like, you know, the style that we have and what we do in the DeFi report in our pro portfolio is we're playing the long cycle. So I'm not a short-term trader. I am, you know, very focused on the cycle itself and liquidity conditions within that. But we were basically risk on in 2022. And we were risk on all the way up until September, early October of last year. We went risk off and we called for like 65K BTC or so. We've come back down to these areas and now, you know, we're now risk on. So I'm not fully risk on just yet, but this report goes through really a lot of the key indicators that we're looking at. The one that I've pulled up right here is the Bitcoin long-term holder supply and profit And as you can see, that's the blue line. And so as we can see, you know, when we come down, you know, down to like the 40, you know, in the early kind of Bitcoin days, this used to come down closer to like, you know, 30% or so. But we can see when it bottoms, it's typically also when the Bitcoin price is bottoming here on the pink line. And right now we are at roughly 50% in terms of the long-term holder, you know, supply that's actually in profit. And when we bottomed in the last cycle, it was about 43.7%. So we're sort of close to, you know, kind of where we got down to in the last cycle. And what we did in this report is we kind of went through some of these key metrics and we measured, you know, when that metric gets hit sort of on the way down in a bear market, what are the potential, you know, forward-looking returns at different levels that these KPIs are crossed. We just talked about how Bitcoin is currently at, you know, long-term holder in supply and profit is at 50%. And so we analyze this using going back to the last two bear markets. And what we're doing here is we're really trying to assess, we think we're at fair value right now, but actually in the last two bear markets, we had like these deep value opportunities. And so we want to understand, what are the historical returns for an investor that allocates at, you know, these 50% fair value levels for this particular KPI. You know, this is the 2018 bear market. But you can see the sort of 1, 2, 2.5, 3 year returns here. And there's a material difference between sort of like fair value and deep value. Deep value in this case would be if the long-term holder supply dropped all the way down to 45%, right? And you could see like this material difference in the 2.5 year return between 174% versus 718%. It's kind of the, you know, a lot of people will tell you that, you know, one of the reasons you want to just kind of like hold your Bitcoin is a lot of the returns happen in like these very short periods of time, right? During bull markets, a lot of times it can be, if you're out of the market for like the most profitable 10-day period, it could ruin your returns for the whole year. And what this tells me is that that's also true in bear markets and being opportunistic in bear markets. You want to have some dry powder for these sort of deep value opportunities because the forward-looking returns materially change based on sort of where you're getting in. And so that's the exercise that we went through in this report. You know, even if you fast forward to the 2022 cycle, we're also showing you the levels that were crossed. You know, again, we're at 50%. Even in the last cycle, your 2.5 year return was around 278%. If you came in at these levels, 3 year returns were closer to 300%. But we can see this material difference again. This is really the difference between buying in, you know, June of 2022 versus waiting until like after the FTX, you know, capitulation. Obviously, we don't know if there's going to be more opportunities or if there's going to be another, you know, capitulation. But in the last two cycles, we have had, you know, at the end of like kind of the year-long bear market, there's been like a final leg down. No guarantee, you know, if that's what we're setting up for again this year, but this is kind of a, you know, I'll pause here to see if you have any questions, but this is kind of the framework that we follow. We follow these KPIs and then we overlay the macro on top of this. And then, you know, our Bitcoin, our crypto portfolios, we typically start with a large allocation of Bitcoin, but we have something called the watch list where we're doing fundamental research on about 30 projects that we've initiated coverage on. And what we're doing there is just like individual asset reports. And what we do is we use Bitcoin to assess, you know, where we're at in the cycle, and we're looking for confidence that Bitcoin has bottomed, and then we'll start to allocate to, you know, we'll start to build out our portfolio with some kind of high conviction bets. So that's kind of how we do it. But yeah, I'll pause there to see if you have any questions.
No, these are just some great points. Yeah. Like especially also on, you know, the 10 most profitable days in the bull market, you know, you don't want to miss. And then also on the downturn, you know, like the You also want to kind of time your entries in that sense, you know. But that leads me to a question that a lot of people have been asking me lately, you know, and it's like, is there something below deep value, you know? And obviously there is prices that could be going lower, but in a sense, like, you need to have a framework that you have here, and you look to past cycles of how things could kind of play out. And if you consider all things equal, I guess this is probably the levels that we're at, and there's not that much downside. If we assume all things equal, you know, there could be this war could spiral totally out of control, and then Bitcoin could be hit even more severely. But that's kind of like then my question. We can't give any financial advice, but given that we're already at these zones, there's not that much gained in waiting, I guess, you know, and really waiting for this deep value, which might never even occur. Probably because there's not that much gained in waiting, it kind of makes sense to allocate some of the capital already and then maybe wait with a chunk for a deep value to be hit if it were to hit. But that's kind of what you're doing as well, where you said, okay, you are now halfway allocated or whatever. But that's kind of like the way how to think about it right now, right?
I think so. You know, in our portfolios, which we share with pro members, we share all of our trades. What I'm trying to do is essentially kind of match up my, you know, the portfolio and the allocation to Bitcoin at this stage of the bear market with kind of what I think the probabilities are in terms of, you know, where we're at right now in terms of fair value, and then, you know, potentially getting some more opportunities. We don't know, right? We know fair value is, we're at a pretty good mark here. In the past few bear markets, we have seen Bitcoin trade all the way down to its 200-week moving average. That's its long-term 4-year moving average. That number's at 58,500 right now. So we haven't gone there just yet. So that would be unique if we didn't go to the 200-week moving average. We got close. We got to, like, you know, 61, 62K or so. But yeah, I think that's kind of the how we do this. This is one more metric we can run through here if you'd like. This is the market value to realized value, and the realized value is essentially a proxy for the kind of cost basis of the network. And the way that, like, Glassnode, some other data providers, you know, track this is they're looking at all of the unspent UTXOs of every Bitcoin wallet and every transaction. And they're essentially marking those wallets with the last time that coin was moved. So if you received some Bitcoin into an on-chain wallet and you have it and that happened 3 years ago, then a cost basis of that wallet would be based on the price of Bitcoin 3 years ago and how much Bitcoin you had there. So it's kind of gives you a rough idea of kind of the you know, cost basis of the network. And right now, you know, again, when this comes down into like the one range or so, that's usually like deep value zone. Right now we're at 1.26. And so again, this is kind of giving you another just kind of view into like kind of where we're at. If we kind of look at like a bunch of metrics here, we come down to the end of the report here. So if we just kind of focus on just the last, you know, bear market, this little table is just showing us the, you know, the KPI low for some of these things that we track. So market value to realized value, MBRV, Z score. We look at the percentage of the supply, you know, held by long-term holders, held by short-term holders. You know, we're looking at 200-week moving average, you know, supply and profit from, you know, long-term holders, short-term holders, things like the 12-month RSI. There's other stuff that we look at as well, but this gives you an idea of just like how close we are to where we've historically bottomed. And, you know, we haven't hit the, you know, kind of deeper, you know, value ranges just yet, but we'll see. You know, we're still fairly early in this bear market. We're about 5 months into this. And, you know, my, I guess, sort of outlook here is just, I think I don't see like a catalyst right now for Bitcoin to make a durable move. And we're sort of, you know, kind of chopping around now for about a month in this kind of 60 to 70K range. And meanwhile, when you look at what's happening sort of on the macro side and the traditional markets, we've seen quite a bit of, you know, just a dispersion and lack of breadth, you know, in the traditional markets. And so I think I'm kind of shifting my focus there a little bit more, and just to see, you know, like you said, Bitcoin's been outperforming. Let's see if that holds up, because I'm concerned that if you did have a, you know, a 10% correction or so or something in the major indices, It would be hard for me to imagine like Bitcoin not also correcting in that. So I think that's kind of where my attention is shifting here. And when we've talked about just sort of the lack of liquidity impulse on, you know, monetary and fiscal side, and now you have inflation and potentially stagflation, I think I need to see sort of some shift or some change coming from the Fed before I can like kind of, you're really kind of get more bullish right now. And so, yeah, I think my bias is like, we're probably, you know, I think the probability is that we will revisit some of those deeper value zones. I think that historically that is what's happened, but there's certainly no guarantee. So.
Yeah, definitely. There's no guarantee in markets, but I mean, you have to have this framework, and that's what you're providing here. And so if people are really interested to check this out in detail, again, you know, go to the defireport.io and then use a discount code less noise, more signal to get 20% off. And then you can look into Michael's excellent research. So I definitely want to put this out there again. I mean, yeah, you're right. You know, it feels like there is more sort of risk to the downsides right now, you know, with Bitcoin sitting at these levels. And then, you know, it's not at deep value yet, but it has historically gone there. And so, as you said, you know, there's many sort of things that you can point to in macro where it could be somewhat a catalyst to get Bitcoin going there. But then historically, again, if we look at prior cycles, when should we expect the bottom? Just when we kind of, you know, zoom out and say, okay, this is what happened in prior cycles. So would it be this year? Would it be next year? Yeah. What's your thinking here?
It's typically taken about 12 months for bear markets to play out. So we peaked in early October or so. And so if we just follow what has happened, you know, in the past, which is remarkably, you know, big crypto cycles tend to play out very similar to the past. And so I'm sort of anchoring to like, that's my base case. So that puts you maybe September, October, it could come sooner. I mean, it could come July, August or something. You know, summer months are usually pretty slow, you know, in the crypto markets. And so that's, you know, definitely a possibility that we end up just kind of, you know, it takes about a year or so. And it feels to me like go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it feels to me like, you know, I it's hard for me to see a catalyst that like sort of sends Bitcoin, you know, in a different direction than where we're going right now. In the past few bear markets, we've sort of like in 2022, we came all the way down to fair value in like June or so. And then we just kind of chopped around. This was like, we were right around 20K or so. We chopped around for 5 months before FTX, you know, happened. So I believe that like 60, 65K is like 20K now. And so we're sort of doing that now, and we'll see. I think, you know, I just don't think there's, if you look at volumes and you just look at, you know, on-chain activity, it's like very clear to me that there's just not a ton of demand for Bitcoin right now. And I think at the same time, we're starting to see sellers, you know, be somewhat exhausted because you're kind of getting down to those fair value zones. So what typically happens in a bear market, like at some stage, it just gets a little quiet. The debate of whether we're in a bull market or bear market sort of dies. The bulls sort of go into hiding. It gets quiet. And once everybody believes that it's over, that's usually the time to be buying.
Yeah, and that's probably what's going to happen over the next couple of months for sure. I mean, one scenario that I see is when we think about catalysts, I mean, usually Bitcoin, that's how it works. You know, it's not one of these straightforward like catalysts that everybody can kind of foresee that is going to get Bitcoin pushing and pumping again. You know, it's usually the other way around. It's price that just kind of pumps out of nowhere. And then people come up with catalysts and sort of narratives as well. But one thing that I see, if we take this 12-month sort of framework, you know, that we have here, that, as you said, this would put us to September, October, potentially even November. And there I could even see, you know, the midterms be this thing, you know, where the Democrats, they kind of win the Senate and potentially even the House. That means, because Bitcoin has already kind of taken out this entire premium that it has, the post-Trump election premium, you know, we've now come back to 65, which is about this. And so that would then, to me, be a really neat bottom signal, you know, because you put in one last sort of low, because now, okay, the Dems are taking over, the entire regulatory clarity that was sort of created by the Republicans is gone. And from there, Bitcoin could start taking off again. But just one potential scenario that I see playing out. Yeah, it will be interesting to see, but it will come around just secretly and silently. And then once we're up, that's kind of the thing that maybe we have to remind people of as well. I mean, the bottom is not something like people are going to call for, oh, the bottom is in, when Bitcoin has already moved up 60 to 80% again, you know, and that's going to be interesting to see.
And when you're actually at the bottom, there's going to be people saying you're going 30% lower. Like I remember when we were at the actual lows in 2022, Bitcoin's trading at like 16, 17,000. And there were lots of people saying it was going to 12,000, right? 10,000. So it's never clear. It always feels really scary to be buying at these levels.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. No, that's definitely something to keep in mind as well. Well, Michael, I think, yeah, that was a great overview. I think we'll leave it at that. We'll be back next month for another update. Hopefully we can keep these coming for people to check out. Again, you know, discount code less noise, more signal for the DeFi report. We'll put it in the show notes as well. We'll put your X account in the show notes for if people want to follow you on X regularly. And so, yeah, just enjoy the rest of your day. And thanks for putting in the time and effort.
Yeah, thanks, Pascal. Looking forward to coming back next month.
Yes, thank you. Enjoy. Bye, Michael.